Chapter 48. But oftenest he had left them there alone, as, by the neighbors, I have been told. How can she bear to see the place, where she so oft has left them there, without a single one to look to them, or of the little ones to take good care? Oh, can she look upon the spot, where under their little burnt bones lay, but what she thinks she hears them say, 'Twas God had pity, and took us on high. ', and there may she kneel down and pray, and ask God or to forgive, and she may lead a different life while she on earth remains to live. Her husband and her children too, God has took from pain and woe. May she reform and mend her ways, that she may also to them go. And when it is God's holy will, oh, may she be prepared to meet her God and friends in peace, and leave this world of care. 1. Written in 1870. The danger of lying in bed, the man in the ticket office said. Have an accident insurance ticket, also? No, I said, after studying the matter over a little. Oh, I believe not. I am going to be traveling by rail all day today. However, tomorrow I don't travel. Give me one for tomorrow. The man looked puzzled. He said, but it is for accident insurance, and if you are going to travel by rail, if I am going to travel by rail, I shan't need it. Lying at home in bed is the thing I am afraid of. I had been looking into this matter. Last year I traveled 20,000 miles, almost entirely by rail. The year before, I traveled over 25,000 miles, half by sea and half by rail. And the year before, that I traveled in the neighborhood of 10,000 miles, exclusively by rail. I suppose if I put in all the little odd journeys here and there, I may say I have traveled 60,000 miles during the 3 years I have mentioned. And never an accident. For a good while I said to myself every morning, how I have escaped thus far, and so the chances are just that much increased, that I shall catch it this time. I will be shrewd, and buy an accident ticket. And to a dead moral certainty I drew a blank, and went to bed that night without a joint started or a bone splintered. I got tired of that sort of daily bother, and fell to buying accident tickets that were good for a month. I said to myself, a man can't buy 30 blanks in one bundle. But I was mistaken. There was never a prize in the lot. I could read of railway accidents every day. The newspaper atmosphere was foggy with them, but somehow they never came my way. I found I had spent a good deal of money in the accident business, and had nothing to show for it. My suspicions were aroused, and I began to hunt around for somebody that had won in this lottery. I found plenty of people who had invested, but not an individual that had ever had an accident or made a cent. I stopped buying accident tickets, and went to ciphering. The result was astounding. The peril lay not in traveling, but in staying at home. I hunted up statistics, and was amazed to find that after all the glaring newspaper headlines concerning railroad disasters, less than 300 people had really lost their lives by those disasters in the preceding 12 months. The Erie Road was set down as the most murderous in the list. It had killed 46 or 26, I do not exactly remember which, but I know the number was double that of any other road. But the fact straightway suggested itself that the Erie was an immensely long road, and did more business than any other line in the country, so the double number of killed ceased to be matter for surprise. By further figuring, it appeared that between New York and Rochester the Erie ran 8 passenger trains each way every day, 16 altogether, and carried a daily average of 6,000 persons. That is about 1,000,006 months the population of New York City. Well, the Erie kills from 13 to 23 persons of its 1,000,006 months. And in the same time 13,000 of New York's 1,000,000 die in their beds. My flesh crept, my hair stood on end. His is appalling, I said. He danger isn't in traveling by rail, but in trusting to those deadly beds. I will never sleep in a bed again. I had figured on considerably less than one half the length of the Erie Road. It was plain that the entire road must transport at least 11 or 12,000 people every day. There are many short roads running out of Boston that do fully half as much, a great many such roads. There are many roads scattered about the Union that do a prodigious passenger business. Therefore it was fair to presume that an average of 2,500 passengers a day for each road in the country would be almost correct. There are 846 railway lines in our country, and 846 times 2,500 are 2,115,000. So the railways of America move more than 2 millions of people every day, 650 millions of people a year, without counting the Sundays. They do that, too, there is no question about it. Though where they get the raw material is clear beyond the jurisdiction of my arithmetic. For I have hunted the census through and through, and I find that there are not that many people in the United States, by a matter of 610 millions at the very least. They must use some of the same people over again, likely. San Francisco is 1/8 as populous as New York. There are 60 deaths a week in the former, and 500 a week in the latter if they have luck. That is 3,120 deaths a year in San Francisco, and 8 times as many in New York, say about 25,000 or 26,000. The health of the two places is the same. So we will let it stand as a fair presumption that this will hold good all over the country, and that consequently 25,000 out of every million of people we have must die every year. That amounts to 1/40 of our total population. 1 million of us, then, die annually. Out of this million, 10 or 12,000 are stabbed, shot, drowned, hanged, poisoned, or meet a similarly violent death in some other popular way, such as perishing by kerosene lamp and hoop skirt conflagrations, getting buried in coal mines, falling off housetops, breaking through church or lecture room floors, taking patent medicines, or committing suicide in other forms. The Erie Railroad kills 23 to 46. The other 845 railroads kill an average of 1/3 of a man each, and the rest of that million, amounting in the aggregate to that appalling figure of 987,631 corpses, die naturally in their beds. You will excuse me from taking any more chances on those beds. The railroads are good enough for me. And my advice to all people is, don't stay at home any more than you can help. But when you have got to stay at home a while, buy a package of those insurance tickets, and sit up nights. You cannot be too cautious. One can see now why I answered that ticket agent in the manner recorded at the top of this sketch. The moral of this composition is that thoughtless people grumble more than is fair about railroad management in the United States. When we consider that every day and night of the year full 14,000 railway trains of various kinds, freighted with life and armed with death, go thundering over the land, the marvel is not that they kill 300 human beings in a 12-month, but that they do not kill 300 times 300. Portrait of King William III. I never can look at those periodical portraits in the Galaxy magazine without feeling a wild, tempestuous ambition to be an artist. I have seen thousands and thousands of pictures in my time, acres of them here, and leagues of them in the galleries of Europe, but never any that moved me as these portraits do. There is a portrait of Monsignor Capel in the November number. Now could anything be sweeter than that? And there was Bismarck's, in the October number. Who can look at that without being purer and stronger and nobler for it? And Thurlow and Weed's picture in the September number. I would not have died without seeing that, no, not for anything this world can give. But look back still further and recall my own likeness as printed in the August number. If I had been in my grave 1,000 years when that appeared, I would have got up and visited the artist. I sleep with all these portraits under my pillow every night, so that I can go on studying them, as soon as the day dawns in the morning. I know them all as thoroughly as if I had made them myself. I know every line and mark about them. Sometimes when company are present I shuffle the portraits all up together, and then pick them out one by one and call their names, without referring to the printing on the bottom. I seldom make a mistake, never, when I am calm. I have had the portraits framed for a long time, waiting till my aunt gets everything ready for hanging them up in the parlor. But first one thing, and then another interferes, and so the thing is delayed. Once she said they would have more of the peculiar kind of light they needed in the attic. The old simpleton. It is as dark as a tomb up there. But she does not know anything about art, and so as he has no reverence for it. When I showed her my app of the fortifications of Paris, she said it was rubbish. Well, from nursing those portraits so long, I have come at last to have a perfect infatuation for art. I have a teacher now, and my enthusiasm continually and tumultuously grows, as I learn to use with more and more facility the pencil, brush, and graver. I am studying under de Melville, the house and portrait painter. His name was Smith, when he lived in the West. He does any kind of artist work a body wants, having a genius that is universal, like Michelangelo. Resembles that great artist, in fact. The back of his head is like this, and he wears his hat brim tilted down on his nose to expose it. I have been studying under de Melville several months now. The first month I painted fences, and gave general satisfaction. The next month I whitewashed a barn. The third, I was doing tin roofs. The fourth, common signs. The fifth, statuary to stand before cigar shops. This present month is only the sixth, and I am already in portraits. The humble offering which accompanies these remarks, see figure, the portrait of His Majesty William III, King of Prussia, is my fifth attempt in portraits, and my greatest success. It has received unbounded praise from all classes of the community, but that which gratifies me most is the frequent and cordial verdict that it resembles the Galaxy portraits. Those were my first love, my earliest admiration, the original source and incentive of my art ambition. Whatever I am in art today, I owe to these portraits. I ask no credit for myself, I deserve none. And I never take any either. Many a stranger has come to my exhibition, for I have had my portrait of King William on exhibition at $1 a ticket, and would have gone away blessing me, if I had let him, but I never did. I always stated where I got the idea. King William wears large bushy side whiskers, and some critics have thought that this portrait would be more complete if they were added. But it was not possible. There was not room for side whiskers and epaulets both, and so I let the whiskers go and put in the epaulets, for the sake of style. That thing on his hat is an eagle. The Prussian eagle, it is a national emblem. When I say hat I mean helmet. But it seems impossible to make a picture of a helmet that a body can have confidence in. I wish kind friends everywhere would aid me in my endeavor to attract a little attention to the Galaxy portraits. I feel persuaded it can be accomplished if the course to be pursued be chosen with judgment. I write for that magazine all the time, and so do many abler men, and if I can get these portraits into universal favor, it is all I ask. The reading matter will take care of itself. Commendations of the portrait, there is nothing like it in the Vatican. Pius VI. It has none of that vagueness, that dreamy spirituality about it, which many of the first critics of Arkansas have objected to in the Murillo School of Art. Ruskin. The expression is very interesting. J. W. Titian.
Keeps a macaroni store in Venice, at the old family stand.
It is the neatest thing in still life I have seen for years. Rosa Bonheur. The smile may be almost called unique. Bismarck. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.